It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, February 9th. We keep hearing about how the federal government is rolling back climate policies. To counteract that, more and more Democratic governors are pushing proposals at the state level to address climate change. We'll talk about how carbon pricing proposals are expected to be one of the dominant issues facing both Oregon and Washington, and how it will factor into the 2018 campaign. I'm OPB political reporter Lauren Dake.
And I'm Cassandra Profita, the environment reporter here at OPB.
I'm Jeff Mapes, the OPB senior political reporter.
And I'm Austin Jenkins, the Olympia-based reporter for the Northwest News Network.
This week, Oregon lawmakers held their first hearing in Salem on a cap-and-trade bill being backed mainly by the Democrats. Cassandra, what are the Democrats proposing?
Okay, so they're proposing a system in which the state sets a cap on greenhouse gas emissions, and about 100 companies in some of the state's largest industries would then have to have permits for their greenhouse gas emissions. And there's a certain amount of CO2 equivalent, carbon dioxide equivalent, that would qualify them for needing permits. So then over time, this cap comes down and there will be fewer permits for greenhouse gas emissions available, and these companies are going to have to pay more over time for the right to emit greenhouse gas emissions. And there's a couple different ways in which they can sort of meet their requirements. They can, you know, pay more for permits, or they may be able to buy an offset. So if there's someone with land, the forest land that they're not going to be cutting their trees on, a company might be able to essentially pay for that offset, and that could cover some of their greenhouse gas emissions. And overall, the goal here is to reduce our carbon emissions as a state to 80% below 1990 levels by 2050.
Okay, and who's going to pay in this scenario? Are we talking about local brewers, farmers? Would the regular person see a price increase at the pump?
So I think who is going to pay is actually the biggest question surrounding all of this. You know, in theory, we know it's about 100 companies in the state's biggest industries. So it's like food processors, manufacturers, there's paper mills, oil companies, a lot of fuel distributors, and utilities. And so the direct impacts fall to them, but the trickle-down effects of that are less clear, right? So the Oregon Farm Bureau is opposed to this measure because they're thinking, well, our farmers are going to be using a lot of gas and energy to grow crops and ship them around, and we don't want to have to pay more for that, for our fuel and our energy. And basically, if you think about it, if fuel distributors are paying more for, you know, the right to distribute fuel, we're all buying gasoline. So there is this figure being thrown around of 16 cents a gallon. I don't think there's any way to prove exactly how much gas prices would go up, but the system is sort of designed to put that extra price on fuel and energy. So we could all end up sharing in that.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed that supporters make a big deal out of saying is that California, which has implemented this, I think, what is it, Quebec and up in Canada have implemented this, and that they have not seen big price increases. Does that tell you anything
or not? Yeah. And that's the whole idea behind creating the system as we're creating it, is we're learning from other states and provinces that have done this before, and we're trying to design it so that no one will feel this impact too harshly. And yes, the supporters will tell you, look, like, it really hasn't been that dramatic of an impact in the states and provinces that have already done this.
But some of it may be that we're just getting into it, right? I mean, I think some of the fear is that as the levels crank down over the next several years.
Exactly. Yeah, it gets harder and harder to meet that cap as it comes down, and the price inevitably goes up for the right to emit greenhouse gases.
Austin, you're up in Olympia, Washington, where Governor Inslee has pushed a carbon pricing proposal for years. Is what he's pushing similar to what Cassandra here is talking about in Oregon?
Well, it's interesting how familiar the impacts sound, but actually the mechanism is different, and it brings to mind the idea that, you know, in Oregon you have an income tax, no sales tax. Here in Washington we have the sales tax, no income tax. So I sort of think this is sort of similar. Oregon's looking at a cap and trade. Here in Washington, the governor is looking at a carbon tax. He initially proposed $20 per metric ton as his tax rate. It's now been cut down by half as it's gone through the legislative or is going through the legislative process. It's now a $10 per metric ton tax. But the idea is very similar in terms of who, you know, who'd be paying this tax, and then that trickle down effect. There's been talk of and at least in the governor's proposal, maybe the price of gas would go up 9 cents per gallon. Certainly natural gas prices and electricity prices would go up. The big controversy here has been, or critics have kind of latched onto the idea that there are a lot of carve-outs in the proposal here. So energy-intensive, trade-dependent companies could get an exemption. Utilities would certainly be let off the hook to some extent as they're transitioning to clean energy. And so we've even seen Republicans, as they criticize this, talking about how if you've got a fat cat lobbyist in Olympia, you'll get a carve-out. If you're a farmer or somebody trying to run a small business, you're going to end up paying more, and they're saying that that's unfair.
Hey, Austin, I have one question. You know, Washington has some really powerful economic players in, I guess you'd call, the new economy, and I'm particularly thinking of Microsoft and Amazon, and then, of course, one giant, longer-time manufacturer, Boeing. How are they reacting to this proposal?
Well, the governor thinks he's really made a breakthrough with business here in Washington, and he's pointing to statements by Microsoft, by Puget Sound Energy, suggesting that they are, if not fully supportive of the proposal, certainly on board with the idea of pricing carbon. He thinks he's making tremendous inroads. Now, keep in mind, the Association of Washington Business, the state's Chamber of Commerce, is still officially on the record opposed to this idea. But there does seem to be a shifting in the conversation and more interest from the business community. But that could be because the governor's been flogging this issue for as long as he's been in office, and even before then. It might also be because there is the very definite possibility of a ballot measure again in 2018, but this time backed by environmental, labor, and tribal interests. And so the business community is also looking at the political realities here and saying if they don't negotiate something in the legislature, they very likely will have to be opposing something that environmentalists wrote that's on the ballot.
Well, Cassandra, you mentioned this briefly earlier. Other countries and some other states have similar cap and trade policies. And like Austin mentioned, in Washington, there's been a bit of a shift in the conversation there as well. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, our program is being designed to plug into a market that already exists from California's cap and trade system and two other provinces in Canada, Ontario and Quebec, that already have this going on. I think, you know, the tricky part is pinpointing, you know, exactly what has worked so well about cap and trade, because it's hard to figure out, did this reduction come from cap and trade? And did this price increase come from cap and trade? And in Oregon, we've heard Pacific Power already complaining about the fact that they're already subject to a couple key regulations that are reducing carbon emissions. So we've got the coal to clean regulation that phases out coal-fired power, and we've got the low carbon fuel standard in addition to our renewable portfolio standard. So they're kind of like, hey, like, we're already on our way down. We don't need cap and trade. And I don't know how you're going to suss out what reductions are coming from cap and trade. At one of the hearings, though, we did hear some really interesting anecdotes from a former environment minister from the province of Ontario, and that his name is Glenn Murray, and he just told this really interesting, that my favorite one was about the mining industry and how this one gold corp, a gold mining company, when they heard about cap and trade, they said, how are we going to decarbonize a gold mine? Like, that's nuts. But eventually they came up with a way to do it, and it's replacing all of their gas and diesel mining equipment with electric versions for the world's first all-electric mine. And so anyway, his point was that there's a whole lot of investment and innovation that's been triggered by this cap and trade program. And here's how he put it.
We have a revolution going on in our mining industry, which is one of our largest industries. Why? Because these guys all, you know, started wearing Birkenstocks, eating tofu, and going to Joan Baez concerts, and, you know, and joining Greenpeace. No, because it was just a smart business decision.
Right. Yeah. So it's not that everybody's, you know, drunk the Kool-Aid and is suddenly seeing, you know, the world is a better place with cap and trade. It's just that they're being forced to come up with new ideas for how to reduce carbon emissions.
So even guys in suits can do this stuff. Huh?
Right. Is that it?
With or without Birkenstocks. Okay, back to Washington State for a moment. Austin, Governor Jay Inslee, who some people call the Green Governor, he's talked about reducing carbon emissions for a long time. He made it the centerpiece of his State of the State address recently. You mentioned earlier how much money he thinks his program could raise, but what is he talking about? What could it be used for?
Yeah, so it's interesting because he has proposed this repeatedly. Initially, he proposed the carbon tax as a way to fund public education, because the Supreme Court here had ruled that the state wasn't amply funding public schools. The legislature didn't go for that last year and came up with a property tax solution instead. So now the governor is saying, well, I still want to do the carbon tax, but now we're going to dedicate most of the money, half the proceeds, to trying to jumpstart and create a next generation clean energy economy in this state. Some of the proceeds would also go to offsetting the economic impact on lower income communities. He talks about forest health and resiliency projects. But what's interesting is that he is trying to sell this to rural Washington. You know, the Puget Sound region is booming. It's doing great. But there are many other parts of Washington that are really struggling. So he was just the past week on an Eastern Washington tour trying to sell the idea, trying to get people interested in the notion that maybe a carbon tax would actually be good for Eastern Washington, would bring jobs in the renewable energy sector to these parts of the state that have higher unemployment and are really looking for a piece of Washington's economic success. So that's kind of his aim right now, is to say, we're going to do things for rural Washington and how we spend money, and we're going to try to drive jobs to these parts of the state. Of course, the critics are saying this is a jobs killer. It's the worst thing we could be doing, especially since we're a low carbon emitting state, and we're just, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot here in terms of being economically competitive.
Cassandra, those two narratives sound pretty familiar. Is that what lawmakers have, they outlined how the state would use this money in Oregon?
Yeah. They've really developed a pretty elaborate system for how they would use the money that would come in from selling the pollution permits. You know, some would go towards helping people adjust to losing their jobs, maybe retrain for new jobs, helping low-income households pay their utility bills if utility rates go up, and supporting rural communities that are sort of disproportionately affected by a lot of the effects of climate change. So a lot of the sort of invest part of the cap and invest system that they're proposing here, it goes towards sort of offsetting some of the impacts of the regulation itself.
We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the politics of these two bills in the two state legislatures.
Support for OPB comes from our members and from Willamette University, with an undergraduate college of liberal arts and graduate schools offering law and MBA programs. Learn more at willamette.edu.
Do you love OPB Politics Now? Do you feel like your podcast feed is just not full enough? Then you can sign up for Think Out Loud, and we're going to give you between 1 and 4 segments every single weekday. I'm Dave Miller. If you haven't listened to Think Out Loud, we are OPB's daily podcast focused on the things that matter to the people of Oregon and Southwest Washington. We've got interviews, debates, and conversations on just about everything. News, arts, culture, sports. Give us a try.
Here in Oregon, Governor Kate Brown has said passing the cap and trade bill this session is a real priority for her. But unlike in Washington, where Governor Inslee talked about it in his State of the State, she didn't mention it. And it seems like Oregon Democrats are now casting doubt on whether it will actually pass this short session. Jeff, if it isn't likely to pass in this 35-day legislative session, why are Democrats pushing it so hard right now?
Well, I think there's a mixture of reasons here. One is, I do think that they want to keep the pressure on. They want to keep this issue in the public mind, continue to try to build support for it, and and that I think they think on policy grounds it's the right thing to do. Politically, I also think they see the advantages in it. One is that this is something that their base is really demanding, and you know, everything from some of their financial backers to a lot of their you know, sort of constituents that are very concerned about climate change, and they want the state to take some big actions. And so I think that is a very important part of the whole calculation on this. And, you know, sometimes I'd be pretty surprised if it did pass. But bear in mind, you know, they've set it up so that it would just take a majority vote in each house of the legislature. And, you know, maybe they've got some way to maneuver it to get those. But like you, I tend to think that's unlikely.
And right, they really want to show to their environmental groups that this is a big priority for them. It sounds like Governor Jay Inslee is more optimistic about this passing up in Washington. Let's listen to what he told reporters yesterday.
But I can't overstate how optimistic I am about this, because there's so many open minds to this idea, particularly in the business community. Look, we have never had businesses in the state of Washington engage in a dialogue about how to reduce carbon pollution. This is like a revolution. You know, you couldn't walk into a boardroom and talk about this last year or 2 years ago. Now you can, and I spent the last 3 days in boardrooms talking to business leaders about why this approach can help them grow their economy. I went into a fruit company in Wenatchee, talked to the production manager, who said, we want action on climate change, and we want a way to do that, and this is a way to do it. That's really amazing to have agricultural leaders say that.
Austin, Governor Jay Inslee is a self-described optimist. Is what he's saying here true? Is the likelihood of something like this passing this year in Olympia?
Well, you're right. He has sort of boundless optimism, and he's a salesman for his idea. He called it, in fact, the Mona Lisa of carbon pricing mechanisms in a press conference this week. And that was in reference to the fact that the legislature has amended his plan.
He doesn't have any self-esteem problems, does he?
No. Absolutely not. But as you mentioned, Jeff, I mean, we're down to fewer than 30 days left in this short election year session. So optimism will only get you so far. That said, it is not insignificant that this proposal has been taken by a handful of dedicated and determined Democrats, especially in the state Senate, who are trying to move this ball down the field. And so they've resized the proposal. They have gotten it out of the Senate Energy Committee. It was an interesting vote where a Democrat who caucuses with Republicans who voted for it, another Republican from the Wenatchee area, he didn't abstain, but he was neither a yes or a no vote on it. He was sort of agnostic. So reading the tea leaves, it seems like, you know, things that the political sands are shifting, but getting it through and getting it passed, despite the governor's optimism, still, I'm not putting odds on it at this point.
You know, it's interesting. Jay Inslee is not running for reelection. You know, he was reelected to a 4-year term last time. Kate Brown is, and it's interesting that she chose not to talk about it in her State of the State speech, to instead focus on a much, I guess you could say, more inclusive agenda, basically saying we need to do more on workforce training, get our entire population, you know, to be able to match the jobs of the future. So she was choosing something that has wider political appeal. And that is one thing about, I think it's clear about cap and trade, is it is far from being a nonpartisan issue and one where everybody agrees on.
And Jeff, give us a big picture here. Are more states going to move in this direction? And how much of this is a reaction to the Trump administration's policies on environment?
Hey, we got through a fair amount of time before bringing up Donald Trump because, yeah, I mean, let's face it, a lot of what is happening at the state level is in reaction to the Trump administration's policies of rolling back, you know, the U.S. backing out of the Paris Climate Accords, you know, an EPA administrator who just this week was saying that maybe climate change is actually good for people. You know, a warmer Earth would be actually beneficial toward humanity, perhaps. So I think there are a lot of reasons why people feel an urgency to act at the state level. In fact, there are 14 states, including Oregon and Washington. In fact, Jay Inslee was one of the founders of this that are involved in this climate coalition who are working with, you know, the Paris Treaty signers, you know, in other words, the rest of the countries in the world, to basically go ahead and try to meet those standards, even if the federal government is not involved in that. So I think there is a lot of work, and there's several states that are working on various varieties of carbon pricing, cap and trade, you know, are just involving utilities, for example. Several states are working on that.
Well, maybe we'll all be surprised and we'll be back here in 30 days and these proposals will be law. We'll see. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Lauren Date, political reporter here at OPB.
And I'm Cassandra Profita, the environment reporter.
I'm Jeff Mapes, senior political reporter at OPB.
And I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
This episode of the OPB Politics Now podcast was produced by Jeff Mapes, with editorial oversight from Kim Frieda. Our music comes from Audio Network, and our audio engineer is Stephen Cray.
Hey, we love hearing your feedback. Email comments and questions to us at opbpoliticsnow@opb.org. Leave us a rating or a review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find this show.
And you can keep up with all of OPB's political news on our website at opb.org. Thank you for listening.